Next one, Krishna continues that, and that will be the end of this section of Karma Yoga, and then he will take up a new subject. So this 18th chapter, as I said, is the summary of the entire Gita. So each few verses, he picks up a different topic and covers a very vast range of subjects in the 18th chapter. So verse number 48. Sahajam karma kaunteya, sadosham api natyajet, sarvarambhahi doshena, dhume nagni rivavritaha. Sahajam karma kaunteya. Sahajam, what comes to you naturally? So what is your natural, what you are good at, what comes to you easily? Sadosham api, even though it may have some defects, even though this particular job has a lot of problems, lot of defects, natyajet, don't give it up. What is natural to you, do it. Do not give up what comes to you naturally. Why? Sarvarambha, all beginnings, all activities, he doshena, all activities have fault. There is nothing in this world that is perfect. Just as, he gives a beautiful example, dhumena agni iva avritaha. Just as a fire is covered by smoke, right? Of course, not the gas fire. I'm talking about the wood fire. In those days, they only had wood. So if you light a wood fire, even if it's dry wood or wet wood, there is always smoke, right? You can never have fire without smoke. They have a saying, you know, where there is smoke, there's bound to be a fire. So just as the fire is always covered by smoke, so every activity has its defects. Whatever job you're doing, it has its problems. So it says, do your duty, what you are supposed to do. Why? They give two reasons. One is, as I said before, if I do what I am good at, if I do it to the best of my ability, I exhaust my vasanas, I reduce my selfish tendencies, and I evolve spiritually. But if I take up somebody else's job that I'm not good at, why? Because that pays better. You know, like this poet who became an insurance agent. Why? Because it pays better. But I am miserable and I won't do as good a job. And even if I do a good job, inside I'll always be miserable. I always wanted to do. So for these two reasons, they say, do your duty. And remember, what is more important is the motive, not what you're doing, but what is the intention with which you're doing. There's a very powerful story. So there was this man who totally disliked his neighbor. He totally didn't like him at all. And he was wishing that something bad happened to the neighbor. The neighbor used to wish something bad happens to this guy. You know, they both didn't like each other. So this guy says, I'm going to go and meditate, you know, and I'm going to meditate so hard, sit, that God will appear and I will ask him. So he goes there and starts sitting under the river bank and starts meditating. Now the neighbor says, where is this guy? He's there. Oh, I'll also meditate. So they are both next to each other, meditating deeply for long periods of time, hours, months, years. And so, you know, God appeared. You know, God does when if you have enough effort. So he appeared to the first guy. So he says, son, what can I do for you? You know, you have meditated so many years. He says, God, give me, I want a lot of money. I want a lot of power. God says, wait, one condition. Whatever you get, your neighbor will get double. So he becomes unhappy. He said, what? Your neighbor will get double. He said, okay. He said, okay, Lord, give me $1,000,000. So there comes a suitcase filled with dollars. And the neighbor gets two suitcases. He's very unhappy. You know, what? You know, my neighbor got two suitcases. He's really mad. He says, God, give me a mansion. So behind him, suddenly a beautiful mansion is created. Behind the neighbor, there are two mansions. So this guy is very unhappy. He says, my whole purpose of meditating is lost. So he thinks. He says, God, make me blind in one eye. So the motive, you know, you may be meditating, but what are you meditating for? You may be, you know, it may look to you like, oh, this person is such a good person. But inside, that's why we find that people, even though they go into spirituality, inside they are businessmen. So even in the spiritual world, they are becoming a business. Even as we had talked last time, even sitting as a priest or a temple, his interest is not how many people are benefiting, but how much money is coming in. Or you know, and so that's why, so the person, or as we said, a politician, if he's a businessman or a corrupt person, not all businessmen are corrupt, but if his whole goal in going into politics is to make as much money as I can, then he may be the highest leader, but his whole goal is to become rich. So he says that ultimately no job is perfect. No job is perfect. If you think that I'll go to work and my boss will say, it's okay, you can come whenever you feel like, you can leave whenever you feel like, Monday morning you don't feel like getting up, come at 10, and you don't like the co-worker, you can shift your... No, it's not going to happen. You know, when you have to be at work at 8, you have to leave at 5, you have to work with co-workers you don't like, somebody is, you know, backbiting, somebody is jealous, somebody, but, you know, jobs are not perfect. And so then this person thinks, how I wish I was the owner of the company. You know, then I wouldn't have to worry about all these managers telling me what to do, an assistant manager, you know, stepping on my head. But the owner of the company has his own problems, right? He said, at least my employee can leave 9 to 5. I can never leave. You know, he works through his lunch hour. He comes, starts at 6 in the morning, works till late at night, works on weekend. He's sitting in Hawaii and he's worried about his business and he's checking online and talking. So he said, I wish I had a, you know, bank manager's job. You know, I come at 9, leave at 5, have 1 hour lunch. So everybody looks upon that this person's job is better or that person's job is better. So what they say is that whatever job you are doing, take it as an opportunity to serve. That let me serve. And when I am serving, automatically the job becomes pleasant. See, if I'm like last week, I talked about that young black kid in Taco Bell. I mean, to see him was such a pleasure. I'm still, his whole picture is in front of every customer he made. There was a long line. Everybody, he made them feel so happy, so welcome, greeting them with a smile. And I was amazed. You know, young kid, he must be about 17 or 18. With what attitude he was working, it's amazing. So that kind of an attitude we should take, that let me make this job a perfect so that more people should come. If I'm a receptionist or a secretary, let me greet everybody with a smile so that more people come to this business, so the business gets better. If I'm a maintenance man, then I have to make sure everything is maintained well. So they say there are two kinds of vasanas. One is we are born with. Another one is we are born into. And Swamiji in his commentary talks about that. I thought I would explain that. See, we are born with certain tendencies and then we are born into an atmosphere. Like a person may have artistic tendency, right? But he gets born in the family of a business people where everybody is into business, but he wants to be an artist. So his tendency to be an artist is what he's born with. But his family of businessmen is what he's born into. So it is more important to be true to what you are born with rather than you're born into, because the pressure from society, from all these parents and brothers and sisters, you need to be in business. But he hates it. He doesn't want to look at numbers. He would rather learn music, you know, take music lessons and become a musician, even though he may not make as much money as his brother is, who is successful. And he said, I don't care for money. I just want to learn music. I want to go to the music school and just spend, I'll roam around in pajamas and, you know, live in a small house. I don't care. So what we are born with is more important than what we are born into. But what we find is that we get so influenced by society that this job is better, this job is worse. On what? Based on money. Okay, this job makes more money, so it's better. So that's what Krishna says, that wherever you are, do what you is your natural tendency, not what society says is right, but what inside you know what you want to do. Because remember, no activity in this world is perfect. Nothing. Only thing perfect is God. Only thing is perfect is the Lord. Everything that we do has its defects, has its faults. Like now I'm speaking, I'm sure there are things I'm not explaining well, or I might have forgotten, or mistakes I'm making, or wrong. Every activity has, that's why even in puja, when people do the prayers, they say, what's that? Mantrahinam, Shraddhahinam, Kriyahinam. Oh Lord, I have done this prayer, chanting. And some of these pandits are beautiful chanters. But still, at the end, they will say that. Why, oh Lord, even though I have done this prayer to the best of my ability, but maybe I made a mistake in the chanting, or maybe I didn't have enough devotion for you, I didn't have enough Shraddha, or maybe I forgot a step, or maybe I didn't do a step correctly. So whatever I have made a mistakes I made, God, forgive me. So that attitude that I cannot be perfect, but I can should realize that every activity has its defect, just as every fire has smoke. Then example is like medicine. Now, even any medicine you make in the world has side effects, right? When you watch on TV, the medicine action, they'll speak for one line and then side effects for half 10 minutes, fine. Then somebody says, why would you even buy that medicine? I don't know why they do that. They make them repeat every little side effect. So the point is that even Tylenol or even aspirin, which are so simple, has their side effects. Too much aspirin can create problems, too much Tylenol. So every medicine has side effect. Nothing in this world is without side effects. Then talking about aircraft, in the olden days, the planes, when the Wright brothers, the planes were rickety and barely could fly, and they flew a few hundred feet and then they stopped. And they used to have crashes, and the planes used to propeller-driven aircraft. Then they came up with jet planes, which are so much better, so superior, and millions of miles. In fact, they say air travel is safer than traveling by car. If you look at the number of miles, it is safer to get into a plane than to get into a car. But people are so afraid of flying, but that is true. But no matter how safe they have made aircraft, how efficient, how better, but still, once a year, twice a year, planes crash. So the point is that nothing in this world, you can make it close to perfect, but cannot make it perfect. So that's what they're saying, that every activity has its problems. But why am I on this earth? I'm here to evolve. I'm here to evolve, to become more spiritual, to become closer to God. And as I have said many times, we have only two duties: serve and evolve. Serve the world and bring yourself closer to God. Those are the only two reasons why we have got human birth. Otherwise, animals also live. They also multiply. They also have children. They also build houses. They also, grow. They teach their children to fly and then they die. The bird does the same. So if all I'm going to do is just take care of my family and die, then I have not evolved. So I am here to evolve. I am here to become closer to God, become closer to my spiritual center. And if preferably in this life itself, I should do it, or if I don't, but if I'm on the right track, in the sixth chapter, which we're doing on Thursday night, Arjuna asks that if I die without having reached the highest, then what will happen to me? So Krishna says, if you have not reached the highest, but if you have evolved to a certain extent, then I'll make sure that in your next life, you are placed in the life, in the house of yogis, in the house of wise people, where you can grow, you can evolve, you can become a better person, and your spiritual journey will continue. But instead of worrying about next life or this life itself, we have this book, we have the knowledge. We have Swami Chinmayananda's commentary, these books you have. So apply that, use that. And they say, do your duty without ego, without selfishness, without arrogance, without pride, without. There's a very, very beautiful story. I think some of you may have heard it. It's an old story, but it's really worth repeating. So there was this sadhu, this monk who was meditating, you know, he was sitting under a tree and meditating deep into meditation. And it was early in the morning, and under the tree, you know, the birds were chirping and all. And as you know, birds sometimes do things, you know, that are not very pleasant. So something, you know, fell on his head. So this monk got very angry. So he looked up in anger, and he looked up and the bird died, fell to the ground dead. He says, look, what a great yogi I am. I want one look at an anger and the bird got destroyed. My meditation I've been doing so many years has finally borne fruit. So he then, as usual, you know, in India, the monks, they don't, you know, earn anything. So they go to the different homes to beg, you know, Bhiksham Dehi. So they ask for food, and, you know, which is, and it's that custom there that we are supposed to take care of these monks. When the saints come to our house, we are supposed to feed them. So he goes, he walks into the nearest village, and he walks at the first home and knocks on the door. And so this lady is inside. He says, Bhiksham Dehi. So she recognizes it is a sadhu here who has come. She says, Mahatmaji, please wait a minute. I'm getting my children ready for school. I'll be right out. I'll give you the bhiksha. So he waited 5 minutes, and she got busy, and then the child was dirty. He had, you know, messed his pants, so she had to change him. And so it took her, instead of coming out in a minute, took her 5 minutes or so, and she didn't come out. Now he got angry. You know, he's really angry because he's like, look at me. I am this great yogi. I could burn the bird. And look at her. She's insulting me by waiting, making me wait outside her door. So he's getting angrier and angrier. So her voice comes from inside. She says, Mahatmaji, she says, I'm not that bird that will be burnt by your anger. What? How did she know that I burnt this bird? You know, that I'm not this bird that will be killed by your anger. So he said, what? How did she know? I haven't told anybody. So afterwards she comes out, she touches his feet, apologizes. I'm sorry, you know, I'm sorry to keep you waiting. Here is the food. He said, forget about the food. I want to know, how did you know that I killed the bird? She said, I just knew it, that, you know, you looked at the bird and the bird died. He said, but I haven't told anybody. She said, no, I know, I can tell. He said, but tell me, how many hours do you meditate every day? He thought she must be a great yogi, right? Meditate? I don't even know what meditation is. No. What Gita have you studied, or Upanishads, or what tracts? I don't have time to study anything. What do you do? He says, I just take care of my husband. I take care of my children. I see God in them. I do a little bit of prayer in the morning after bath, 5, 10, 15 minutes. That also if I have time. Otherwise, whole day I do my duty, serving God, remembering God. And whoever comes to my house, I see God in my husband, God in my children, God in my guests. If any poor person comes, I give them, you know, whatever I can. You have come. So that is all I do. I don't do all this meditation study. I don't even know all this. He said, no. You couldn't have. How can you know this? You know, I thought I was a great yogi. I can't tell. How could you tell? Do you have a guru? So she says, yeah, I do. There is the. Your guru has given you this knowledge. So, you know, where is your guru? He's in the next village. So, how can I find him? I need to go meet this great yogi who could teach you, an ordinary housewife, to know what happened in the forest. You must be very... He says, his name is Mahendra Pratap Singh. So, where is he? He says, he's in the next village. You can go find him. So in those days, they didn't have cell phone or phone or, you know, she didn't call him and tell him that Mahatma is coming. She said, just go find him. He'll be there. So he goes, you know, he forgot about food or anything. He wants to find out how this great yogi is that could train this lady. So he goes there. He enters the village. So there's this guy sitting, you know, in the shop. He says, is there any great yogi called Mahendra Pratap Singh? No, I've never heard. Four people, everybody asked. He said, he must be very famous. He's a great yogi. He's a great saint. He's a great monk. There is nobody like that. What are you talking? You know, there is nobody. Then he goes to this policeman. He said, do you know this, anybody like that? He said, look, I know everybody in this village. It's a small village. And there is no yogi. He said, but is there anybody called Mahendra Pratap Singh? He says, yep, there is one guy called Mahendra Pratap Singh. He lives in that next street in the third house. There he is. There's only one guy with that name. He said, okay, he goes there and he looks in the house and it's an ordinary house. And he peeks in there and he said, who is this guy? He's wondering. So then this person comes out, gets ready and he's going to work. So he follows him. He said, let me see what he does all day. He goes and he's a butcher. He's actually cutting meat and selling meat. It can't be this guy. He's so shocked. But he said, okay, he watches him all day. He cuts meat and he's going back and he's still following him. And finally, he builds up courage and he knocks on the door. And so this guy comes. He says, oh, that lady in the next village sent you? So what? How did you know about it? They didn't have phones. He says, and I also heard about your bird. So what? You also heard about my bird? How did you hear about my bird? So he says, you must be a great yogi. He said, no, I'm not a yogi. I'm a butcher. I just cut meat. And in India, butcher's job is also, because a lot of people are vegetarian, so butcher's job is a little bit looked down upon. So I'm just a butcher. He said, but how could you get so much? How many hours do you, it's a simple question. How many hours do you meditate? He said, I don't meditate. I don't even have time to meditate. How much books you have read? Have you read Brahma Sutras? Have you read Upanishads? Have you read, I have not read anything. I'm a simple butcher. He said, how did you get this job of a butcher? He says, my grandfather was a butcher. My father was a butcher. I am a butcher. So I was trained. So I became a butcher. No. What do you do all day? Tell me, what do you do? How much do you study? He says, look, I'll tell you what I do all day. I get up in the morning. My parents are old. They are invalid. They can't even get out of bed. And I didn't marry because I wanted to take care of my parents. And so I take care of them. I make sure they get a bath. I make sure they get food. I make sure they're well taken care of. I can't afford to keep a servant, but I do the best I can. Then I go to work. And every customer who comes, I give him exactly the right thing. I don't cheat anybody, even an ounce. Whatever he has paid for, he gets. I do my duty to the best of my ability. I see God in every individual who comes. I come home, same thing. I take care of my parents. I make sure they are fed. I make sure, that's all I do. And he says, and you should remember that the bird you killed was not your look. His bird's time had come. The bird was ready to die, and the excretion he put on your head was his last act before the bird was going to die. By your looking at the bird didn't die. If a bird's time had not come, even 100 Mahayogis looking for hours cannot do anything, because the God, once he protects somebody, you cannot be. So don't get this ego that you are doing something great. Whatever, wherever the Lord has placed you, do your duty to the best of your ability without ego. And that is the way. Don't think that what you're doing is good, meditation and all that. But remember that it is the ego that is the problem, that I and my, that I am somebody special, I am somebody great, and this and that. Whatever you're doing, do it sincerely, do it honestly, do it as a service of Lord, and you will evolve. I'm not saying that what the point of this story is that, yeah, if you have the desire to meditate and all, do it, but do it without ego. But whatever job you're doing, do it as a service of God. Then every action becomes divine. Every action becomes prayer. You can go to the temple or not go to the temple. Like last week, I told the story about that vegetable seller who helped these three boys to evolve. So when a person is doing his job as a service of the Lord, every job is prayer. Every job is service. If you go to the church and light a candle, very good. If you don't have time, the Lord will understand, because he knows that you're doing his work. And it cannot only have to be in a church or a temple or a mosque. It can be in your own house. It can be in a butcher shop. It can be a lady serving the family. So that's what Krishna says, that Every action has its defects. But if it's done well, done sincerely, without ego, as a service of the Lord, it can take you higher to the highest siddhi, highest siddhi, highest state of evolution you can reach by doing service. I want to make one point clear. Because this chapter is with Karma Yoga, we are talking about it. Still, the path of knowledge is still fastest. You know, they all will lead you to that one truth. The path of service, the path of love, the path of yoga. But the path of knowledge is the fastest. But you have to be suited for that. Not everybody is. So what we, as I always say, do all three. Do some service, love God, pray, and get some knowledge, reading. So when you do all three, then your growth is faster. So do not limit yourself. Only I'm going to do service. Only I'm going to do prayer. Only I'm going to do knowledge. Do all three. And then, but still the right knowledge is very important. And that's why this reading this Gita or listening to the teachers and listening to Swamiji's commentary and reading, it helps us. So it was not meant to belittle the path of knowledge, but because this section is dealing with karma, so we talked about it. But ultimately, all three are important. You have to know God, you have to love God, and you have to serve God.
The knowledge enhances the other two, I think.
Yes, absolutely.
But the history shows that people who just do God's work, we have more example of them than rather than the people who have knowledge.
Now that's true. Again, it depends on your inclination. But I think as far as the path of knowledge, I agree with you to some extent. But what most people say is that ultimately you have to choose one path and one guru. One, like suppose you like Buddhism, then choose Buddhism and go deeply into Buddhism. If you want Vedanta, then Gita, Upanishads, go deep into that. Study to the depth. If you like Confucianism or Taoism or you know, it doesn't matter which path, they are all leading you to all the paths of knowledge. The problem is that people keep switching. One day they go to this guru, then second day this lecture, and then third day. It's not that you become fanatic, but once you have found what is good, then go deep in it. Like we have so many oil wells in Kern County, right? If you keep on digging little wells, you will never reach. You find a good spot and then you go deep, 500 feet, 1,000 feet. Then you will strike the oil. So similarly, the path of knowledge will take you. But like he said, it has to be supplemented. You do, and it happens spontaneously. Once you start serving God, you want to know who God is. You develop love for God. Once you know who God is, you automatically get love and service. So all three are together, the path of bhakti, the path of karma, and the path of gyan. And so I think, but whichever suits you better, but ultimately they will reach that. But like talking about Tukaram and all of them, they actually spread so much knowledge with their abhangas. Look at Tukaram, look at Narsimha Mehta, look at Mirabai. Even though their intention was not knowledge, but when they reached that highest goal, they became sources of knowledge for everybody else, for all of us. We learn so much from Mirabai's bhajans, from Tukaram's abhangas, from Narsimha Mehta's teachings, all of them. Narsimha Mehta has so many beautiful songs he wrote and poetry and all. So they all ultimately reached that where they became lighthouses for the rest of us. And the topic actually gets a little more difficult. Because now he's talking about actionlessness. From action, how can you go to actionlessness? So that is Naishkarmya Siddhi. And how can you reach the highest Siddhi? By actionlessness. So that will be our topic. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukha Bhavave. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Guru Pyo Namaha Hari Om.